Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. I guess my invitation got lost in the mail. Damn it. The invitation to the big Sunday meeting in Vail, Colorado, the Koch brothers summoned 12 Republican governors to get their marching orders, right? To be told what they have to do in order to continue to receive the largesse from the Koch brothers. Wouldn't you love to have been a fly on the wall of that meeting? Like I say, my invitation apparently got lost. Oh well. Maybe next year. Hey, this hour is sponsored by No, this is later. This is later. Okay. I don't want to blow this one because there's a very sweet message here. I don't think we have a first hour sponsor, do we, Kathy? You ever get the feeling we're not loved as much anymore? Let's start tonight with an email from Kate Petrini, our education correspondent. She writes, Mike, I've been spending a lot of time out on the roads training for the San Francisco Marathon. Because I'm so slow, it takes me a long time to cover the miles, and I often run out of fresh Malloy Show podcasts to fill the hours. Thank goodness for Ben Birch and the White Rose Society archives. Yeah, he's got every, I think he's got everything I've ever done, for God's sake. I listened to the October 27th, 2003 program. It was a particularly jam-packed program. 2003, was it 8 years ago? Some of this is hilarious, but some of it is tragic because you can see not much has changed in this country since the bad old days of the Bush crime family. Now, according to what Kay listened to from our October 27, 2003 program, one, Walmart was accused of hiring illegal immigrants to perform janitorial duties at their stores. Two, American contractors in Iraq were using cheap migrant labor rather than unemployed Iraqis to build what the U.S. had destroyed. Three, the Reverend White, who had preached against homosexuality at Yale University and on other college campuses, was arrested after offering $20 to a 14-year-old boy to perform oral sex on him. Four, the Fox News Channel complained to the Fox Cable Network that an episode of The Simpsons featuring a news crawl along the bottom of the screen would confuse viewers of Fox News, who would think that the cartoon was Fox News. Five, you read an obituary of an elderly woman who asked that donations in her honor be made, quote, to any organization dedicated to the defeat of George W. Bush, end quote. Six, and finally, you went ballistic over Chuckle Nuts' gibbering about Iraq having a peance-friance future. That has to be one of your more hilarious rants. From the past to the present. In 2011, Walmart continues its abusive behavior, which has now been sanctioned by the U.S. Supreme Court. American contractors continue to make a fortune in Iraq and Afghanistan. Avowed right-wing, quote, Christians, unquote, continue to be caught in compromising positions. Fox News continues to appeal to the brain dead, despite what Russell Simmons says. And although I haven't looked at any obituaries lately, I will bet that there are at least a few members of my late mother-in-law's generation, FDR Democrats, who are making appeals to defeat whichever one of the Republican presidential candidates gets the nomination next year. Oh, and Michelle Bachmann seems to have taken over where Bush left off in the idiot department. Kay. Oh, by the way, you can read Kay's articles at Kay's Report Card. .com. K-A-Y-S. Kay's Report Card.com. Boop. Fred in Huffsneck, Massachusetts writes, Mike, I just heard that House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Republican of Virginia, is shorting the bond market. If true, he is anticipating a default, or at least running the debt ceiling negotiations right up to the last second on August 2nd. This has got to be blatantly criminal. Signed, Fred, and his last name, in Huffsneck, Massachusetts. So here's the article, very quick, from the Wall Street Journal blog. What do Bill Gross, Evan Newmark, and Representative Eric Cantor have in common? They're all betting against Treasury debt. But only two of these men have been involved in heated negotiations over the government's debt ceiling. And I'm sorry, only one of these men, and that's Eric Cantor, the number two Republican in the House. Mr. Cantor, who walked out of debt discussions with Vice President Joe Biden last week, owns up to 15,000 shares of the ProShares Trust Ultrashot 20-plus year Treasury ETF, Salon notes today, updating a Wall Street Journal report on this from last year. Salon argues this means Mr. Cantor has a conflict of interest in the debt negotiations. Conventional wisdom holds that letting the talks fail would roil the bond market, R-O-I-L, hurting treasuries, which would benefit Mr. Cantor. The TBT is up 3% since Mr. Cantor walked out of debt talks. But to be fair to Mr. Cantor, he also owns a lot of treasury debt, and the TBT merely hedges some of that exposure, his spokesperson tells Salon. And there's more. Isn't that interesting? The second most powerful person in the U.S. House of Representatives appears to be going short on U.S. Treasury bonds, which means he's hoping, or he's betting, let's hope my ass, he's betting, that's all this is casino gambling and kabuki theater, he's betting that the debt ceiling will not be raised, which will make U.S. Treasury bonds, Wall Street Journal says it will roil the bond market, R-O-I-L. I don't know anything about the bond market, but I would say it would devastate the bond market. Jesus God. Eric Cantor always got the interest of the United States first and foremost in his conservative little heart. Huh? You been following what's going on here at Los Alamos? Have you? The town, the entire town now, how big is it? About 12,000 people. It's been evacuated yesterday afternoon. Firefighters trying to stop this raging forest fire in New Mexico that is moving onto the nation's largest nuclear lab. Hope that they'll be able to defeat this monster. The wildfire has burned 60,000 acres or 93 square miles in just 2 days. It sparked a spot fire at the Los Alamos National Laboratory yesterday. The fire was quickly contained, and lab officials said, harumph, no contamination was released, oh hell no, and radioactive materials stored at spots on the sprawling lab were safe. Do you know what is stored out there? See, nobody ever pays any attention to Los Alamos National Laboratory. Or what do we have? Five national laboratories? Is that what we have? Do you know the toxic stuff that is stored in the open on the Los Alamos site? I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I read. A little bit more when we come back.
The captain said, excuse me, ma'am, the species has amused itself to death.
The lab employs about 15,000 people. Now, by lab, it's not just one big building. Come on. It covers more than 36 square miles and includes about 2,000 buildings at nearly 48 different sites. These sites include research facilities as well as waste disposal sites. Did you know that? Some facilities, including the administration building, are in the community of Los Alamos, where others are several miles away from the town. The spot fire, it's being called, that occurred the other day, scorched a section known as Tech Area 49, which was used in the early 1960s for a series of underground nuclear tests with high explosives and radioactive materials. Oh, really? Lab spokesman Kevin Rourke said environmental specialists were monitoring air quality. Yes, we are. But the main concern was smoke. The anti-nuclear watchdog group concerned citizens for nuclear safety said the fire appeared to be about 3.5 miles from a dump site where as many as 30,000 55-gallon drums, 30,000 55-gallon drums of plutonium-contaminated waste are stored in fabric tents above ground. 30,000 55-gallon drums of plutonium-contaminated waste stored in fabric tents above ground. My, my. The anti-nuke watchdog group said that the drums are sitting there awaiting transport to a dump site in southern New Mexico. Just, you know, haven't gotten around to it yet. Lab officials at first declined to confirm that such drums were on the property, but in a statement early this morning, lab spokeswoman Lisa Rosendorf said such drums are stored in a section of the complex known as Area G. She said the drums contain cleanup from Cold War era waste that the lab sends away in weekly shipments to the waste isolation pilot plant. Oh, Jesus Christ. She said the drums were on a paved area with very few trees nearby and would be safe even if a fire reached the storage area. Lab officials have said it is miles from the flames. Uh, Los Alamos National Lab, this is where you get the history, was established during the Second World War as part of the Manhattan Project to develop the first atomic bomb. In 2009, the U.S. Department of Energy's Inspector General issued a report that said Los Alamos County firefighters weren't sufficiently trained to handle the unique fires they could face with hazardous or, you know, radioactive materials at the site. Lab and fire department officials at the time said the report focused too much on past problems and not enough on what had been done to resolve them. Yesterday, lab and fire officials said they were confident that if the flames reached the lab property, they would be able to protect its sensitive facilities. So, move along. Nothing to see here, and certainly nothing to worry about. Los Alamos nuclear lab. Wouldn't it? I mean, think for just a moment. In a karmic sort of way. Uh-oh. Here he goes. In a karmic sort of way, if the fires reached where all that plutonium, 30,000 55-gallon barrels, are stored in fabric tents and caught fire, and the smoke wafted into the sky, and the prevailing winds carried it to the east, and it kept going and going and going. Do you know that the resulting deaths would probably exceed the deaths that occurred when we dropped two nuclear weapons on Japan? Karma's a bitch, you know? Before the hour. Now, while the threat is still very, very active regarding Los Alamos nuclear labs and the contamination that may come or is coming, you know, who knows? Because of the fires and the contamination that is kind of floating around the world in the jet stream now from the Daiichi plant in Fukushima, Japan. That's become a Japanese story. Have you noticed? All of a sudden, the American media are not too interested in that story anymore. In addition to all that, then we have the two nuclear power plants in Nebraska, both on the Missouri River. Uh-oh. The one that apparently is in most danger, or not any danger, depending on who you listen to, is Fort Calhoun. You can go to abcnews.go.com and see a very interesting video of the floods at Fort Calhoun, Nebraska. The head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, him again, has been dispatched to Fort Calhoun, where, as we mentioned last night, huge berm, water-containing berm, collapsed on Sunday. This nuclear regulatory dude says the public is in no danger. The breach in that berm allowed the Missouri River floodwaters to reach containment buildings and transformers and force the shutdown of electrical power. Backup generators, diesel generators, the ones that were desperately needed at Daiichi, are now cooling the nuclear material at the Fort Calhoun Nuclear Station. I have no, how old is that one? Is that up there around 30 or 40 years old too? I don't know. Anyway, the plant has not operated since April because of all this disaster, and officials say there is no danger to the public. No. Jeff Hansen, a spokesman for the Omaha Public Power District, told the Associated Press that the breached berm was not critical to protecting the plant. Although a crew will look at whether it can be patched. Well, if it's not, oh, never mind. Mr. Hansen said, quote, that was an additional layer of protection we put in. Well, that's good to know. Regardless of that, federal inspectors are on the scene. Now, the federal inspectors, nuclear regulatory commissioners, this is the watchdog, giggle, giggle, chuckle, agency that's supposed to oversee all things nuclear in this country, certainly the power plants. I don't know about the nuclear radiation that goes on in the local hospital or here at Georgia Tech, but I guess at Georgia Tech, yeah, because they have a little reactor down there. But the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is a wholly owned subsidiary of the nuclear industry. When the regs are written, especially during the Bush crime family era, when the regulations were rewritten and decisions were made whether or not to enforce regulations already on the books, the chummy relationship between the nuclear industry and the NRC came to the front, and don't worry about it. Everything's cool. Hey, come on, man. Damn, don't worry about it. If anything bad happens, we'll just all jump on our jets and head to the South Sea Islands. Oh, wait a minute. We can't go there anymore. All right, we'll head to the mountains. Don't worry about it. Everything's cool. Meanwhile, the rumors and innuendos continue about the power plant, the nuclear generator. Most of them, you know, 95% of what you, all right, whatever percent of what you read on the internet is just flat out garbage, most of it right wing garbage. There is no fly zone being enforced over the plant other than the one that was put in place after September 11th, 2001. But it's being disregarded as news choppers like the one from the ABC affiliate that took the video that said abc.go.com. They're flying in a restricted zone, but there is no fly zone, A. B, there is no lockdown on information from a government standpoint. The information coming out, just like the information that came from Daiichi, is coming from the power company that owns this potential disaster sitting on the Missouri River. So, you know, you can go to these various websites. You see all kinds of crapola. Truth is being suppressed. No, it's not. The truth is not being suppressed at all. At least not by the government. Now, as far as what the truth really is inside Los Alamos National Laboratory or the nuclear power plants on the Missouri River that are under imminent threat of invasion by water, which would tend to, you know, blow out the electrical systems. And then, of course, they can fire up the diesel generators, which they have done, in order to keep cool the massive amounts of radioactive death sitting in these cooling ponds. Just waiting. You know, you have a substance that has a half-life of 240,000 years. Do you think that substance, if it had any consciousness at all, would really pay any attention to your dumbass little water pool? Do you think plutonium is sitting there in its little contain the area going, oh, gee, well, you know, we're stuck. Can't get out of here. Damn, I'd like to get out of here because, man, do you realize what we could do? 30,000 55-gallon drums of us. If we get into the environment, man, we can bring this whole kabuki thing to an end. Just, come on. Free us. Release us.
No, you're stuck. We got diesel generators. Oh, damn.
It's getting scary. Oh, wait, what's this from Prairie 2? Oh, here he goes again. Prairie 2 writes, there isn't any real danger from those waste storage units catching fire. Those fabric buildings are used on farms and such and aren't particularly flammable. And neither are steel barrels. The ground around them is bare, so it's not going to be a problem. Those flooded reactor sites are a bigger concern if something unexpected happens. Whew. Well, I'm glad to hear that. For a while there, I was, you know, just a little bit worried, I guess, Bruce, after I read the article that said 30,000 55-gallon drums now are sitting there. Now, of course, since it is reported by the people who know that they are not near any trees and the fabric is will withstand, you know, will withstand fire, and everything's cool. Yeah, well, okay. All right. I guess then we're out of the woods, so to speak. What else we got here? All right, you want to go from the absolutely horrifying to the truly horrifying? We'll go from, you know, the potential of nuclear disasters in this country to something even worse, at least in the moment. And that's Michelle Bachmann. Boy, she is just, I've said many times, why give these ridiculous halfwits any kind of media coverage at all? Sarah Palin, of course, being the sine qua non of that idea. And then we have Michelle Bachmann, who is truly nuts. I mean, Palin's just a rock star. She just wants the money. Give me the money. God damn it, give me the money. Come on, man. Am I going to run? Am I not going to run? Am I going to run? Am I not going to run? Tease. Ooh, ooh. My husband loves it when I tease. How do you feel, America? Tease. Yeah. Am I going to run? Am I not going to run? Yeah. Sarah Palin is a rock star. She's out for the money. I mean, my God. You know, when she resigned as governor. Now her movie is about to open in a little town in Iowa. The title of the movie, The Undefeated. There's an error in the title, of course, if it's referencing Sarah Palin. She's been defeated twice in elections. But anyway, I digress. Michelle Bachmann. She reminds me of Lady Macbeth. Or who else? I don't know. There is something isolated and bizarre about this woman, Bachmann. I'm just waiting for her to stand up in one of these meetings to go, out, damn spot! Out, I say! It's got to happen. But until it does, we have some information here for you about Michelle Bachmann that you may already know. But stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. 10 before the hour. I get to Bachman in a minute. Hear from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, regarding the fire at LANL, Los Alamos National Lab. Michael writes, this has happened before. The Cerro Grande fire in 2000 had a plume that stretched across four states from the satellite photos I've seen. And the lies about radioactivity and safety were as thick as the smoke at the time. I know of one woman in Santa Fe who still will not use her outdoor gardens because of the radioactive ash deposited in them from that fire. This time around, though, we're not going to know how much radioactivity will be picked up by the fire, since the detectors in most states have been turned off because local environmental departments don't want to know the extent of airborne radiation originating from Fukushima. But the spokeswoman at Los Alamos is being somewhat truthful. The fire in 2000 really scared them. At that time, there was lots of stuff in cardboard boxes and thrown in trenches. There was a lot more dry fuel around then. Over the years, they have tried to selectively burn out the dead wood to deny the fire fuel in Area G and to clean up the highly flammable items. What's waiting for shipment, I think, is mostly a combination of fine turnings and chips of plutonium in cutting oil and or cleaning products used to clean up the machining tools. Michael. Oh, well, that's almost as reassuring as what Bruce wrote. so not to worry. Guys, I think I will worry. Of course, there's not a hell of a lot I can do. You know, we don't live that far up in a little nuclear reactor right over here at Georgia Tech. Did you know that, Kathy? Oh, you knew about that. I'm not sure what goes on at University of Georgia, but plutonium in bits and pieces. Well, that's... you know, Michael, if you were trying to be reassuring... You weren't. This Bachman, I will sit here and say, why do mainstream media outlets give her any attention at all? And then I'll sit here and talk about her, but I'm not a mainstream media outlet. I'm this little tiny radio, 25-cent radio program tucked away on Sirius Left and a handful of radio stations and the internet. Michelle Bachman says John Quincy Adams was one of our founding fathers. I mean, this kind of ignorance should be a disqualifier for president. You know, Bachman always gives you that thousand-yard stare, or not you or me, but, you know, her interviewer, whether it is Stephanopoulos or Chris, what's his name on Fox? Chris... you know, his dad's on 60 Minutes, Chris Wallace. No matter who it is, you know, every time she's caught, which is every time she opens her mouth, and these asinine, half-witted statements that a high school freshman could very easily correct her on. She'll stare at the questioner like, oh, well, you know, John Quincy Adams, was around at the founding of the nation. He was just a little boy, but, you know, but the real issue is whether or not, President Obama understands economics, and he obviously doesn't. And you know what else? He's afraid of me. And you sit there and you think, why am I sitting here watching this psycho? I mean, this is really a clinically insane woman. I mean, just totally, totally out there. This morning, during an appearance on ABC's Good Morning America, Bachman was given an opportunity to set the record straight with regard to comments she made earlier this year, praising the nation's founding fathers for working, in her words, tirelessly until slavery was no more in the United States. I mean, this is how goddamn ignorant this woman is. George Stephanopoulos asked her, to address the state, but noting that many of the country's founding fathers, including Jefferson and Washington, in fact, had slaves. Some of them were boinking their slaves. Some of them, like Jefferson, had offspring. There are two branches of the Jefferson family, the Sally Hemings branch and the Thomas Jefferson branch. And when they get together, black folk and white folk get together for family reunion, it's really something to see. And Bachman apparently doesn't know anything about this. Or doesn't care. And her followers don't care either. Oh, that's so long ago. Oh, for Christ's sake. That was what? 400 years ago? Here's how the exchange went down. Bachman. Well, you know what's marvelous is that in this country and under our Constitution, we have the ability when we recognize that something is wrong to change it. And that's what we did in our country. We changed it. We no longer have slavery. That's a good thing. And what our Constitution has done for our nation is to give us the basis of freedom unparalleled in the rest of the world. Stephanopoulos, I agree with that. But Bachman, that's what people want. They realize our government is taking away our freedom. Stephanopoulos, but that's not what you said. You said the founding fathers worked tirelessly to end slavery. Bachman. Well, if you look at one of our founding fathers, John Quincy Adams, that's absolutely true. He was a very young boy when he was with his father, serving essentially as his father's secretary. He tirelessly worked throughout his life to make sure that we did, in fact, one day eradicate slavery. Stephanopoulos, he wasn't one of the founding fathers. He was a president. He was the secretary of state. He was a member of Congress. You're right, he did work to end slavery decades later. But so you are standing by this comment that the founding fathers worked tirelessly to end slavery? We'll be back after the break. Zion Curtain in Utah. He's not referring to the Israelis. He's referring to the Mormons behind the Zion Curtain. And Jeff writes, Mike, here in Utah a few years back, we had a large wildfire in central Utah. I remember officials saying that fallout from the nuclear bomb testing all those years ago was detected in the ash. Yeah, it's stuff that doesn't go away. I mean, 40 or 50 years from now, ask the Iraqis. And the Afghans and the people in Central Europe who were, all these groups were the objects of our use of depleted uranium-encased explosives. Depleted uranium because it's such a hard substance and penetrates things. But it never goes away. It's there forever. And, of course, I'm not going to bore or disturb, depending on your point of view, you with any of the reports of the spontaneous abortions and the in Iraq and the horrifically, almost unspeakably deformed children that are being born that got that way, according to people who know about this to a far, far, far greater degree than I ever will. That's a result of all the nuclear material, or the radioactive material, I should say, that's in the environment in Iraq. Anyway, back to Bachman. I mean, she's crazy. She, and this should be. Let me back up. We do not have qualifying tests in order to vote. We used to here in the South. That was to keep our dusky brethren from showing up at the polls. we don't have qualifying, other than age and residency, qualifying restrictions on people who want to run for public office, right? There should be. There damn well should be, in my opinion. And when the day comes that I am king of America for a day, I will put all this stuff into effect. But in the meantime, we have Michelle Bachman. Earlier this year, remember, Bachman told a group of local New Hampshire Republicans, quote, "You're the state where the shot was heard round the world in Lexington and Concord." I mean, she stands there and says this stuff, and the people who are staring up at her, I mean, what do they think? Not all of them are as brain dead as she is. Not all of them are flatliners. Some of them must look up at her and think, Michelle, that's not right. That happened over there in Massachusetts. And then Palin, the other moron, talking about Paul Revere rode to warn the British that the Americans were coming, and then immediately her flatline followers go to Wikipedia and try to edit the whole story.
What'd she say? One if by land, two if bisexual?
Something like that. I don't know.
No, I think what Bachman was trying to say was that John Wayne Gacy probably worked tirelessly to free the slaves in Iowa.
That's what it was. Anyway.
Well, it wasn't John Quincy Adams.
No. Most of these remarks from Bachman come one day after she formally announced her candidacy for President of the United States. And she told CNN this morning, she said, quote, "I'm introducing myself now to the American people so that they can know that I have a strong academic scholarly background. More important, I have a real life background."
I can see Alaska from my house.
No, she's not the one that sees Alaska from her house. That's the other one. You know, you talk about the gruesome twosome. These two, the Mopsy twins, I've never seen anything like this. In an appearance on the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Network on this little twit Hannity's program last night, Bachman suggested that Barack Obama, quote, "is threatened by my candidacy. He fears me. He sees me as a serious, substantive competitor. I think he sees that I have a very clear path to victory for the nomination, and I think he wants to do whatever he can to diminish me because he thinks he'll have to see me in the debates. That's my intent, to take him on in the debates and to win and take the voice of the people that I serve to the White House." Jesus Christ. See what I mean about clinically insane? I mean, this woman suffers from delusions of grandeur that are just off the scale. I mean, there's no way to measure this stuff. The DSM-4, 5, what's out now, has no way of measuring this. Oh, my God. Also on the program, Bachman accepted an apology issued by Fox News Sunday host Chris Wallace after he asked her if she's a flake. And she told ABC's Jonathan Carl about that comment. She said, quote, "I think it's insulting to insinuate that a candidate for president is less than serious. I'm a very serious individual." Jesus H. Christ, where do these people come from? What pod opened up in some cave somewhere and these things crawled out? These Bachman things and these Palin things and these, oh God. And what about her anti-gay statements? Huh? What does it say here? This is from The Guardian of the UK. Given the explosive excitement surrounding Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann's White House bid, it was perhaps no surprise that organizers of a Minneapolis conservative bloggers conference, Right Online, over the weekend chose to introduce her with the infuriating catchy Katy Perry song, Firework. Bachmann is now a real rock star of the hardcore Republican right and the Tea Party faithful, but the song choice showed a profound misunderstanding of popular culture. For Firework, whatever one thinks of his musical merits, is a gay anthem. The video Katy Perry filmed to go with it preaches a message of universal tolerance. It includes a young man coming to happy terms with his sexuality and kissing another man, which, to put it mildly, is ironic for Bachmann and her legion of supporters. Oh, and what did I hear? Who was it just warned her to stop using one of his songs? Oh, what's his name? Damn it. Don't email me. I've got it close at hand here. Bachmann has spearheaded fights to get a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage in Minnesota. And as the Guardian of the UK says, that in itself is not too unusual, but what is unusual is the fervency of Bachmann's anti-gay agenda. Her stance does not seem cynical politicking to her base. It seems rooted in her core beliefs and evangelical religious outlook. Remember, Bachmann once hid behind some bushes? Remember that, to keep an eye on a gay rally in St. Paul? Remember that? In another notorious incident, when two lesbians once approached Bachmann in a bathroom to talk about her anti-gay opinions, Bachmann claimed she was being kidnapped and fled to police to try to press charges. In 2004, she called being gay, quote, part of Satan. In the same year, she also compared it to slavery, saying, quote, if you're involved in the gay and lesbian lifestyle, it's bondage. It is personal bondage. Personal.
That was it. That was it. It was John Quincy Adams. He worked tirelessly to end homosexuality.
It is personal bondage, personal despair, and personal enslavement. She sounds like she has a working knowledge of some of this stuff. Bondage, enslavement. Michelle, really? Are you, I mean, could it be, She said teaching young children about gay people is akin to child abuse. And she has claimed that gays have, quote, a sexual dysfunction, end quote. She says she believes gays specifically target children. And she said recently that she believes America is on a path that will eventually see young people forced to try being gay. Machine that says, hey, conservatives, be afraid, be very afraid. And now more of Mike Malloy is not working tonight. God, I wish we had a real radio program.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid, be very afraid.
That's live.
It's more Mike Malloy.
That's live. Hey, that was pretty cool. Michelle's husband, Marcus Bachmann, who, according to all reports, is a major influence in his wife's political career and beliefs. I think it's more than that. I think Marcus Bachmann has some kind of a switch that he has in the back of her neck, with electrodes that go into a certain part of her brain, and he controls it with a remote control device. I mean, nobody can stare like that and tell these lies and these twisted versions of U.S. history with a straight face. And when she's caught on it, just say, well, you know, Chris or Judas or whoever, whatever your name is, you know, that's the great thing about America is that when we start out wrong, like with slavery, we can always change it. Yeah, but that's not what you said. And I think that President Obama doesn't understand economics, you know, like I do. But that's not what you said. And besides, you know, I mean, it's just beyond. Anyway, her husband refers to gays as barbarians. That's his word. Here's a quote from him. Quote, we have to understand that barbarians need to be educated, need to be disciplined. What is with these two? Bondage, discipline. Listen to this. Enslavement. Listen to the words they're using. She uses bondage. He uses discipline. You bet your ass, truth seeker, that when the Bachmans get together in the basement on a happy Sunday night, I wonder what her safe word is. So did Michael. I wonder what her safe. I mean, you don't use this kind of language unless you know. But I think, you know, that's one of the horrific aspects of Christianity. It is so deeply into enslavement and bondage and beatings and discipline, and I mean, just take a look at that Mel Gibson movie. What was the name of it? The Passion of the Christ, was that what it was? Which I've never seen, but I've seen enough trailers and enough bits and pieces. It's just disgusting. It's horrifying. Jesus porn. Anyway, her husband says, we have to understand the barbarians need to be educated. They need to be disciplined. And just because someone thinks they're gay or feels it doesn't mean we need to go down that road. That's what is called the sinful nature. End quote. Now, of course, Bachman denies that he runs courses seeking to cure people of their sexual orientation. But in 2005, he spoke at a conference, and according to a person present, ended his presentation with testimony from three people who claim to have been cured of their gayness and were now all involved in straightness. Oh! His speech was called The Truth About the Homosexual Agenda. I don't think I have ever found two words that are so immediately identifying of the person speaking them as those two words, homosexual agenda. As soon as you hear that, I mean, it just opens up their life like prying open a can of tuna fish or salmon. Do you ever notice that? Someone uses that term, homosexual agenda, rip. Everything is right there and it just spills out all over the place. Everything about them is revealed when they use those two words. Homosexual agenda! Am I right? You know I'm right. As soon as they say that. Oh, I know what you're about. What is really scary, though, the Guardian UK says about Bachman's anti-gay beliefs and how they have run roughshod over her own family. She has a half-sister, Helen, who is a out and proud lesbian. The two were close as they grew up together in their teens. Not surprisingly, Bachman's anti-gay comments have not gone down well with her sister or several other relatives. They have written letters to newspapers opposing Bachman's stance or appeared at political hearings on attempts to ban gay marriage. You know, here we have somebody who's running for president whose core conviction is naked prejudice against some of your fellow citizens. We'll be right back. Well,
bedtime lullaby. It's more like Malloy.
Oh, it's working now. Oh, that was you live again? Oh, I wasn't looking through the glass here. I was looking at something. One of our listeners has discovered. I made a big mistake earlier tonight. I said that Eric Cantor, quoting from this blog, Wall Street Journal, I said Eric Cantor, who walked out of debt discussions with Vice President Joe Biden last week, owns up to 15,000 shares of the ProShares Trust UltraShort 20-plus year Treasury ETF. My bad. And Reed, I think it's Reed, caught this. The way it should read, Eric Cantor owns up to $15,000 of shares. Between $1 and $15,000 invested in ProShares Trust UltraShort 20-year Treasury EFT. I don't even know what the hell EFT is. No, don't tell me. So it's my mistake. I said 15,000 shares. It is not. It is up to $15,000 invested in these ProShares Trust fund, which you know, still bets against a debt ceiling, but there's a hell of a difference between $15,000 worth and 15,000 shares. So thanks to Reed for catching that. And when he first caught it, I wrote back to him and said, no, you're wrong. I'm using Salon.com and Wall Street Journal. So Reed sent me the actual articles, and there it was. I hate it when that happens. I really do. Grind. All right. Back to Bachman. It is not unusual that a right winger be homophobic or just have a right wing evangelical Christian develop an attitude that people who happen to be of a sexual orientation different from theirs are somehow the spawn of Satan. That's not unusual. I think what is unusual, though, in this case, all right, let's back up. Look at Dick Cheney, as much of an evil son of a bitch as he really is, because one of his daughters is a lesbian. He has, you know, obviously the politicalist or personalist political or whatever that expression is. Once it hits that close to home, you know, probably one of the ardent advocates, although he's not vocal about it at all. For so-called same-sex marriage, which I called the ability of people of same orientation to form a marriage contract, what's his name? Cheney is in favor of that because his daughter is an out lesbian. She and her partner have a child, which is Cheney's grandchild. But Bachman, since she is involved in the deepest kind of mind control, I think, by her husband Marcus, it doesn't matter to her. She grew up on friendly basis with her half sister, who is out lesbian. They had no problems, but now all of a sudden she's turned into this frothing homophobe. And then there's this about Bachman and her husband. NBC News is reporting this earlier tonight. I think Michael Isikoff, who is now has the title of chief investigative reporter for NBC. I guess he left Newsweek, didn't he? Anyway, he went to Minnesota State Records, and he found that Bachman and Associates have received $161,000 in Medicaid funds that have gone. These funds have gone to Bachman and Associates. Now, her husband runs this clinic or whatever. I don't even know what it is. It's some kind of a clinic. I thought they worked with addicts, but maybe they try to program people away from their normal sexual orientation. I don't know what they do. Maybe they have live human sacrifices in there. It's all beside the point, given Bachman's stance regarding Medicaid and people getting government checks. Her family also gets money from the government for from the Department of Agriculture subsidies. This woman is a lying son of a bitch. Do you get this? Do you understand this? She is a fraud and she is a hypocrite. $161,000. Now, she made a statement when someone questioned about whether or not her husband receives Medicaid funds. She said something about, well, one time it was a grant that came for some kind of... No, this has been going on for 6 years. That's what NBC reporters said, Michael Isikoff. 6 years she's been getting, her husband or this clinic, Bachman Associates, have been getting these payments. 6 years. So not only is she dumber than a sack full of toadstools, she's a liar and a hypocrite. And she, you know, obviously she wants everyone to take her oh so seriously. So why is she showing up? Why would Bob Schieffer be talking to her on CBS? What is it? Face the Nation? I watched that segment and you know, Schieffer, it's my understanding, is kind of a centrist, maybe a little bit to the right in his politics. But I think Schieffer, having Bob Schieffer, from having been a legitimate news guy, he's one of the guys from the old school, from the Cronkite and Huntley Brinkley and so on and so forth. And don't write me something that says they were frauds too. You know, I'm just going on the mythology. All right, just leave me alone. All right, but Bob Schieffer, being of the old school, I've seen so many times when he knows he's listening to a liar, to a flat out liar, and Schieffer, you know, doesn't sit there and say, "Well, you know something, Congresswoman Bachman, you're a liar." You know, he doesn't say that. What he does say is, well, you're not answering the question. Well, you still haven't answered the question. You know, I've asked you a question that it deserves an answer because you're running for the presidency. You know, he'll say that over and over again. And Bachman is so immunized against that line of questioning, that those attempts to get her to acknowledge that A, she's a fraud, B, she's a liar, C, she's a hypocrite. She is so immunized against that that Bob Schieffer is just a little puppy dog as far as she's concerned, nipping at her ankles. Now, Bob, you know, one of the things that I truly believe is that President Obama doesn't understand where this country is. But Ms. Congresswoman Bachman, you have said da-da-da-da-da-da, and that is just not true, right? Bob, one of the great things about this country is, you know, you get that kind of response from Bachman. Bachman will take somebody like Schieffer and just turn him into some irrelevant lump of mail sitting there. And yet, I mean, given her ignorance and her hypocrisy. Oh, and by the way, as was pointed out on NBC tonight, so much of the Medicaid fraud occurs in the very kinds of organizations like Bachman and Associates. Not that there's any indication of fraud, but that's where it occurs. It doesn't occur in the big hospitals. It occurs in these clinics. Fraud, out and out fraud. So how does Bachman get elected over and over again? How many times, what is she, sixth term member of Congress? What is it, 12 years? How does that happen? How can people in Minnesota be that monumentally, stupefyingly ignorant that they would send, or is it because they like to feel superior to their elected representatives?
Well, I know Michelle's a dumbass, but I would just as soon have her go there. Makes me feel big, makes me feel smart.
I'm going to try to stay away from as much of Bachman as I can. But it's galling to me that we have a mainstream media in this country that pretends that a candidate of this monstrous ignorance is a viable candidate for president. I mean, this is where corporate media,
What are they doing? Are they playing? Is this a game? Is this what editors and assignment editors, whether it's print or television, is this what they consider, you know, afternoon sport? Is this fun? You know, let's dangle this psycho from Minnesota in front of people. Let's put some truth out there about her lies and deceptions and fraud, but let's pretend like she's a really serious candidate. I mean, isn't that what they did with Palin? A jerkwad like Palin, who says that Paul Revere was trying to warn the British that we weren't going to let them take our guns away from us. People didn't have, they didn't use guns back then. They kept their guns in an armory. Oh, Christ, I can't stand it. We'll be right back.
Angry, let Mike Malloy do it for you.
10 before the hour. Stan wrote in, that was the Tom Petty song, and he demands that Michelle Bachmann stop playing Petty's song American Girl. Thanks, Stan. Just drawing a complete blank on that. This happens a lot with these right-wing candidates. Petty also insisted that George W. Bush not use "I Won't Back Down" to promote his run for the White House. Remember that? You know, these people who look at rock and rollers as some kind of subhumans, and yet they will take their music. Who was it? It was wasn't it Reagan that took "Born in the USA," which was a song highly critical of the United States. And the boss tried to explain that. And, of course, Reagan, you know, I mean, he had nothing to do with the selection. It was, I think it was, wasn't that Reagan? I think it was. And Gary at UC Berkeley writes, Mike, the Manhattan Project never ended. Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory was set up in 1952 deliberately to compete with Los Alamos, to create and actively promote the most ingenious ways to incinerate a rather nice planet. The competition between the two labs became the master gear that kept the USSR running as fast as it could to keep up until it no longer could do so. But it never stopped and goes on until this day. Both labs are shadow campuses of the University of California that the UC Regents administration do not want the public to connect with the other 10, although photos of both are featured along with the others at UC headquarters in downtown Oakland as equals. Thanks, Gary. Mike said as he shuddered. This kind of stuff really does scare me. I mean, it does. In a way, I'll tell you how it scares me, because I'm not basically a scared person. I'm a pissed off person. But it scares me. On Sunday, I went to see The Tree of Life. Terrence Malick's new movie? And Malick, of course, never sits for an interview. You have no idea what this movie is about. And I watched this film Sunday night by myself. Kathy and Molly were in Denver, and I'm watching this, and I was just dumbstruck. I have never seen a flick like this one, The Tree of Life. And I walked out of that theater with there weren't too many people there for a Sunday night showing, maybe, I don't know, 50 people. And there wasn't a sound. You know, when you come out of a theater and people are going, well, did you see the part? Yeah, well, I think what the director was trying to do. None of that. And I told Kathy today I was glad I saw it by myself because it was just, I don't know, if any of you seen it, The Tree of Life, it's, I don't know how to describe it, but it left me with a very, very unsettled feeling. I don't want to call it fear necessarily, although it felt like fear sitting in that dark theater, but just very unsettled. You know, the purpose of good art is to influence your perception at any given moment, you know, for good or for ill, for up or for down, whatever. You look at art, no matter what it is. It can be literature, sculpture, film, whatever. If it has no effect on you, it either speaks volumes about the piece of art or it whispers about you. But this film, The Tree of Life, if you have not seen it, I really strongly recommend that you do. What was interesting to me was that in the first 45 minutes maybe of the film, there were three or four people who, I'm guessing, they left the theater, but I'm guessing as to why they did. They got up and walked out. They couldn't take it. Just couldn't handle it. And I can understand that. But if you want to see a film that I think would have, I may be wrong. I mean, maybe some of you go see it and go, what the hell is he talking about? I don't think so, though. I think if you go see this, you'll come out of that theater, wherever you see it, and you just, I don't know. I can't tell you what the plot's about. Sean Penn is in this film. I bet you Sean Penn, I told Kathy, I don't think Sean Penn has 10 words of dialogue. He's not in it that much, but he's in it completely. And Brad Pitt has one of those roles that, I mean, certainly shows him as the actor, the artist that he really is. I don't do film reviews. I really do. I just don't. I don't talk about the flicks I go see because, you know, it's like talking about what kind of toothpaste I buy. It's ridiculous. Who cares? I like reading film critics, though. I really do like reading reviews of films. I really, truly do. And we used to have a real good writer here at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Eleanor Ringel, who invariably, over a 20-year period, if Eleanor liked the flick and I went to see it, I liked it too. I thought she was spot on for me. But there's no way, you know, for me to sit here and try to review that movie for you. Not that you'd want to hear a review from Mike Malloy anyway, but if you get a chance, go see it. Because it was a feeling, I was real aware that the feeling I was getting at the time was an unsettled feeling that was very close to fear or disorientation or maybe some kind of anxiety. You know, when you watch a movie, you're sitting there going, I know this is a movie, but if you're a real good theater goer, you will willingly suspend your disbelief and just get right into it. So if you do go see it, The Tree of Life, send me an email. Tell me what you thought. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Pam. Can I give her last name? Pam Grunemeyer. And she has such a nice message here. Happy anniversary, Stephen. Thanks for putting up with me for these 33 years. And may we have 33 plus more. We know that we need to fight the fight now. Ooh, I like that. Thanks, Pam. Anniversary message to Stephen. Thanks for putting up with me for these 33 years. And may we have 33 plus more. That's sweet. All right, Pam, thank you very much. Have you been following the situation in Greece, not just the rioting, but what is prompting the rioting? Oh, I know the American press is painting the Greeks as a bunch of candy asses and babies who just wanted a free ride. Mike writes, I hope the general public burns Greece to the ground. Good for them for taking to the streets. And don't take this nonsense from the banksters. We in America are so stupid and dumbed down, we allow it to happen here. The math is 3/4 of the economy is generated by the consumer. Then why doesn't everyone stay home for 2 or 3 days and buy nothing? See, we don't have to be violent to get the point across. Have a great day, Mike B. General strike has disrupted services across Greece. And riots erupted once more today outside Parliament. Demonstrators are protesting tax increases and spending cuts essential for the country to receive critical bailout funds that will prevent a potentially disastrous default. Disastrous to whom? You know, Argentina defaulted back in the 80s? And Argentina is doing just fine. You know, I'm sorry. You may see me as some kind of an anarchist who has no respect for the law or something. But were I the Greeks at this point, I would just give the finger to the European Union and say, take your goddamn euro and get out of my country. Just get out. And go back to, what's their money? What was their money? A drachma? Oh, I know. And Bruce Enberg, before you start writing to me and telling me how crazy that is, you know, I'm going to read your blog here, your missive for today in a moment. But what is being done to Greece, I think, is, and I don't know that much about it. I'll admit it. I know what I read. I know what I've heard. But what is being done to Greece, I think Greece is being made an example of. I think it's just being beaten and flayed by the banksters and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Let me just go to Prairie, too. Let's see what he's got. All right, here's what he says. The Greek parliament is waffling on approving the looting of their country demanded by the IMF in return for a temporary bailout. It's billed as a once-and-for-all fix to their problems, but if they approve it, they can kiss their economy goodbye. The average Greek seems to get it, as rioting has increased with the general strike underway. The Greeks would lose their electric grid, their waterworks, their gas companies, their railways, their airports, their seaports, post offices, telecom company, defense factories, public land and buildings, stadiums, tourist attractions, important landmarks, and the site of the Olympics and Mount Olympus, if the banksters can find it. The EU is saying, take it or leave it. But Greece would be far better off dumping the euro and negotiating a paydown of their debt in new drachmas. Creditors would be happy to get anything, and putting their own money in circulation would guarantee a market for Greek products, as buying stuff would be the only way creditors could get paid. That being said, this would not be without risk for the Greeks. The IMF would be likely to seek retribution after being snubbed. You need to understand that we are in the middle of World War III, and for the most part, the modern despot seeking world domination doesn't wear camouflage. He wears a $3,000 suit. Of course, if you happen to be sitting on resources they want, and they can't make you bankrupt, then you could get a visit from the guys who still use bullets. So the Greeks can keep their country and pull themselves up by their bootstraps, or they can give it away for vague promises of prosperity someday. There are many here that are ready to give our country away just the same way, and I've been getting their comments on my blog. The right has an entire fantasy world laid out with its own history and system of economics. It's poor people's fault that they borrow so much money. The right can't grasp the fact that the corporate overlords are running a company store right out of the grapes of wrath. Under supply-side economics, like we've had the last 30 years, the only way to sell enough goods is to loan money to the upper-paid workers, or the goods simply pile up. Ben Bernanke says he can't understand why the economy doesn't recover. Well, Ben, it's not that complicated. Consumer credit has been curbed, as their equity is largely tapped out, and wages are falling. You have to do one thing or the other. Pay people enough so they can buy the Model Ts, or you need to loan them money so they can shop at the company store. Loaning money creates a nice big bubble, but bubbles always burst. This works great for the rich, who make money on the way up and steal assets on the way down. Paying decent wages so that the productivity gains in an economy are distributed to the people who are productive gives you endless opportunity for growth and prosperity. The rich don't do so well under a merit system, as only the really creative ones do well, the trust fund babies not so much, and have to go get real jobs. But an awful lot of Americans think they will be trust fund babies someday if they side with the rich. They don't have any plan for this, maybe buying lottery tickets, but they are sure it will happen just the same. So, they're okay with making other people poor, and the poor can starve. But this will make them better off. They've read the talking points and can be heard on the radio if they can't read. Selling off public assets is fine with them, as they think that this will cut taxes. It won't, of course, as the government will pay to rent them back for twice the cost, and other public resources will simply be lost forever. But don't worry. We can all be trust fund babies. PrairieNumeral2.com. Well, I'm glad that's his position, because mine is exactly the same. Exactly the same. You know, the Greeks, I hope. Okay, let me go ahead and say this and really freak you out. I'd like to see the European Union just come apart at the seams. It is a false organization to begin with. It was a half-assed attempt to prevent World War III from developing, where World War I and World War II and God knows how many wars, most of which had their roots in some kind of religious sophistry in the countries of Europe. But the countries that are on the verge now, Portugal, Italy, Spain, Greece, on the verge of some sort of phony, false bankruptcy. What happened? Did yesterday all the entrepreneurs leave these countries? Did yesterday all the farms stop producing food? Did yesterday all the factories shut down? Did yesterday all the shipping companies go belly up? No, none of that happened. But these filthy, goddamn capitalist, pig, bankster bastards. Oh, I can't cuss enough about these people. Well, they look for new victims. Greece. Who cares about Greece, right? Bring them to their knees. We want everything. Like Prairie 2 pointed out. We want your ports. We want your stadiums. We want your electric grid. We want your waterworks, your gas companies, your railways. Your post offices, your telecom companies. Bastards. I hope the Greeks refuse. I don't know how the vote went in Parliament. I think it was supposed to go down tonight, local time. But I'll sure be watching tomorrow to see what happens. Stay with us. Present.
We'll be right back.
That's the hour. If you want to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. And this hour is sponsored by Pam Gronemeyer. Her message, happy anniversary, Stephen. Thanks for putting up with me for these 33 years. And may we have 33 plus more. We know that we need to fight the fight now. Oh. Thanks, Pam. The Greek meltdown. Arianna Huffington, who is Greek, had a interesting piece up at Huffington Post, of all places. It's rather lengthy. I'd like to share it with you, but it's just a little bit too long, I think. You ought to read it, though. But the general strike that has erupted across Greece, you know, the people of that country have decided that taxing them at a level that is punitive, and I'm talking about the working people, the middle class, the working class. I'm not talking about taxing the rich sons of bitches in this country or Greece or the UK or wherever who should be taxed at an extremely high rate. I'm talking about the workers who have been told that in order for Greece's creditors to release the next $12 billion euro chunk of the country's billion euro bailout, that the Greeks have got to give up everything. And they've got to be taxed right up to their eyeballs. The working class. Spending cuts essential for the country to continue to function are demanded in order to get these bailout funds. The tax hikes are on those people with minimum wages. Unions called for a two-day general strike today. Well, earlier today. Halting, according to the article I have, which is, I have no idea where it's from, sorry. Two-day general strike was called today, halting nearly all public transport, forcing airlines to reschedule or cancel dozens of flights, bringing public services to a standstill. A peaceful protest by about 20,000 people quickly degenerated into violence, with riot police firing volleys of tear gas and stun grenades to keep people people who are pelting them with thousands of chunks of ripped up paving stones and marble chipped from building facades and steps. Even some deputies with Prime Minister George Papandreou's government have voiced dissatisfaction with the measures. And Papandreou is a socialist being forced into this. I mean, he's crazy. If he goes along, if the Greek Parliament goes along with this, it's absurd. Like I said, they ought to give the middle finger to these international bankster bastards and tell the European Union to kiss its Greek ass and leave the European Union. Just get out. European Monetary Affairs Commissioner Olli Rehn said, quote, I trust that the Greek political leaders are fully aware of the responsibility that lies on their shoulders to avoid default, end quote. Maybe that's why the Greeks have been getting an awful lot of pressure lately to not allow the ships sailing to Gaza to leave port. You think? Huffington writes, given that the Greeks invented democracy, it's only fitting that they're now being given the chance, to reinvent it. And yes, I know we Greeks have a reputation for myth-making and drama,
But as I found out during my trip to Greece last week, those really are the stakes. Until I went over and witnessed what's happening, I too had become convinced that the real issues were the ones the media were obsessively covering. The effects of a potential sovereign default on the euro and worries about the crisis spreading to other European countries. But here's the bigger issue, Huffington writes. Can a truly democratic movement break the stranglehold of corrupt elites and powerful anti-democratic institutional forces that have come to characterize not just the politics of Greece, but most Western democracies, including our own? Good question, Ariana.
The voice inside your head, it's Mike Malone.
Hour is sponsored by Pam Grotemeyer. Her message, happy anniversary, Stephen. Thanks for putting up with me for these 33 years, and may we have 33 plus more. We know that we need to fight the fight now. Is it Stephen or Stefan? I never know how to pronounce when it's spelled that way. I think it's Stephen. I'll go with Stephen. See what happens. Thanks, Pam. Just a couple more lines here from Ariana Huffington's piece today. She says there's a bigger issue here. Can a truly democratic movement break the stranglehold of corrupt elites and powerful anti-democratic institutional forces that have come to characterize not just the politics of Greece, but most Western democracies, including our own? Greece is only an extreme example of an unfolding seismic social shift that is changing democracies the world over. What happens in Greece might very well tell us whether democracy will recover from the crisis of legitimacy exacerbated by the financial crisis, or whether it will shrink, undermined by the very forces that brought on the crisis in the first place. Yeah, I mean, it's just getting so unbelievably out of hand with what the so-called financial elites on this planet are doing. And as far as the United States is concerned, there are 330 plus million of us in this country. We have been jerked around for the past 40 years. I mean, severely jerked around. Wages have gone steadily downward. The minimum wage, if it were equal to, if it were adjusted for inflation that have occurred, that has occurred over the past 30 or 40 years, the minimum wage right now would be anywhere from $12 to $14 an hour. And what is it? What is the minimum wage, Kathy? Six, seven, something? The ultra wealthy in this country are becoming even more so. And these dumbass right wingers who think that someday they are going to be ultra wealthy, are you people thinking with your feet? Have you been so absolutely corrupted and brainwashed by people like Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and people who are extremely wealthy themselves and speak only for the extremely wealthy? Have you become so just absolutely incapable of seeing your own life for what it is that you believe these bastards? Why are we not in the street? Why are we not out on a general strike? What is it going to take? How bad does it have to get here? Or is everybody in this country a goddamn coward? Is that what we've become? Are we so afraid of, I don't know what, the terrorists. I know, the CIA. The FBI. We're all afraid of, fill in the blank. Of course, that's what the Bush crime family spent 8 years inculcating into the American collective psyche. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Don't do anything that calls attention to you. That's what all this horse crap is when you go through. What's the story I heard today about this TSA Nazis making this old woman who was trying to get home to die take off her goddamn diaper because there was a lump in it and the lump was coagulated urine? Did you hear that one? An 87-year-old woman? What is that? And then some son of a bitch goes on television apologia for these half-ass bastards with the TSA thing on their arm. Who is kidding whom here? Every time I fly and go through these phony-ass security checks, it's just astonishing. The last three times Kathy has flown, she's had her suitcase open, and inside, not mine, not Molly's, inside, there'll be one of these forms. Your suitcase was examined by the Transportation Safety Administration. If your suitcase had been locked and the lock would have been broken, it would be your responsibility to fix it. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Why they're hitting you, I have no idea. Three times, the last three flights in sequence that we've taken, she has gotten hit with these people. What the hell? Have we gotten to the point, the people in this country, that we are so goddamn cowardly and so afraid of our own shadow that we listen to these demagogue little pricks like Hannity and Beck and this bloated drug addicted bastard Rush Limbaugh? How much longer is this going to go on? How much longer? Go Greeks, kick ass! Don't give up. I just wonder what do we have to do? I'll tell you what. Eric Cantor and Boner, don't raise the debt ceiling. Don't do it. Come on, you snake sons of bitches. Don't do it. Let the country default. Of course, that's pretty risky because the following day the Chinese might be showing up in our ports in their warships demanding, assets. But do it. Go ahead. Go ahead, you Republican swine. Don't raise the debt ceiling. Let it all collapse. That'll be a good way to get rid of the black man in the White House. One. Let it collapse. Let the whole damn thing fall down. And then, as Arianna Huffington says, can a truly democratic movement break the stranglehold of corrupt elites and powerful anti-democratic institutional forces that have come to characterize not just the politics of Greece, but most Western democracies, including our own? Are we all cowards? Are you a coward? Wherever you're listening, are you listening on your computer right now? Are you listening on Sirius? You driving someplace? Are you listening on an airplane? Where are you right now? Have you had your courage just sucked out of you? Robert is driving in Indiana. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Mike. Good to get a hold of you. I enjoy listening to your show. It's a pretty good program. I've been and I listen intensely. I wanted to respond to your comment about being a coward. I mean, I will be glad to stand with you, and I personally think we need an armed revolution. The thing is, we will be arrested. Our right to stand up is gone. We can't do anything anymore without being hauled away, being jailed.
But
and
no way.
A majority of the people...
Yeah, but Robert, we don't have enough prisons or camps or locations to arrest 5, 10, 15, 20 million people.
That's just the thing.
That doesn't exist in this country.
Well, 5, 10, 15, 20 million people won't stand up. Only about maybe 1,000 will.
Well, that's...
And then when those 1,000 are arrested, then they're going to say, look, see, we've stopped the resistance. Now continue to be afraid. Don't dare stand up anymore. This is what's going to happen to you.
Well,
you see what I mean?
Right. No, I do say... No, exactly. Yeah. I exactly see what you mean. And what I've been talking about on this program is, if 1,000... I was at a protest in D.C. back in March. There might have been 300 or 400 of us, and some of us got arrested and some of us didn't. You put 100,000 people in the street, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to get popped. You put 10 million in the streets and there's no way to do it. No way to stop that kind of a movement unless you call out the military. And if you call out the military, then it's an open invitation to let the thing go up to the next level. And then you have a full-blown revolution on your hands. And I don't think that the money bastards, the people driving this discontent and this corruption, this country really want a full-blown revolution. I don't think they want that. They don't want people in the streets smashing things. They don't want to see 10% of the population say, I've had enough of this goddamn stuff, and stop buying or stop selling or stop doing anything except taking to the streets and saying, we've had enough. I don't know. Robert, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. I would hate to think that I live in a nation of cowards. I would hate to think that we have gotten to the point. Either cowards or people who have been so anesthetized into what is happening to them that they've just said, I don't know why they're picking on rich people. Goddamn Malloy, typical communist crap, What has happened? Has been sponsored by Pam Grunemeyer, who is celebrating her 33rd anniversary with Stephen. She writes, thanks for putting up with me for these 33 years, and may we have 33 plus more. We know that we need to fight the fight now. It's a message from Pam to Stephen. Thanks, Pam. Very sweet dedication. Very sweet of you to sponsor an hour. Thanks. I remember I mentioned this the other night, 10-10-11, Monday, October 10th, national strike for the American middle and working class. I don't know that much about it yet, but they have a website. You can check them out, nationalstrike.wordpress.com. Nationalstrike.wordpress.com.
At least somebody is trying to organize resistance. Nationalstrike.wordpress.com. Warren is in Revere, Massachusetts. Hello, Warren.
How you doing, Mike?
All right. How are you?
Well, hanging in there. That's all you can do today. You were talking earlier about the civil unrest in Greece, you know, the possibility of a collapse and all that. And, you know, you have this, what do they call it, Arab Spring going on in the Middle East. And people forget that this unrest in Europe, you know, began before we started getting news of that. And the news seems to treat the two phenomena like they're completely separate. But I don't know that I think it's coincidental that these things are happening at the same time.
I don't think these are separate events. I think people have basically the same aspirations. I don't think people, for the most part, want to be considered the exceptional group. I think people just want to have a life, and when your economic system, the global economic system, has gotten to the point that it is so, first of all, unfair. There's a quaint little word. It has become so unfair. And not only unfair, exploitative, not only exploitative, but also destructive to just everything that it touches. The global economic system now, this out of control neoliberal capitalism, is destroying everything, including the planet. So when you get people who become aware of that, it doesn't make any difference if they're in Tunisia or Greece or South Los Angeles. We're not, human beings are not completely stupid. The Republicans are, the conservatives are. They're walking around with gas in their brains. But normal people understand that things have got to be changed, and if they're not, then people are just going to suffocate.
Yeah. Well, the world situation to me, maybe I'm being a little paranoid, but I don't think I am. You know, look, I mean, it looks so dire that within a generation or two, maybe even less, maybe just a generation, we're going to be looking at, you know, some kind of post-apocalyptic scenario like The Road, you know? I mean, water shortages, food shortages, you know, because a certain little, you know, group at the top of the pyramid wants to hoard, you know, all of the world's, you know.
Well, that's the part, Warren, that you know, I maintain just simply cannot happen. I don't want to live the kind of life that comes out of the mind of a screenwriter, and neither do you. You know, ever since I saw Road Warrior and all those movies from 30 years ago, the old Mel Gibson movies, the post-apocalyptic, even what was that one, Kathy, Waterworld? Well, you know, terrible movie. But, you know, I see that stuff and I think, that's what would happen. What could happen if human beings were incapable of controlling their own political destiny? And we are able to control our political, maybe not destiny, that's not the word I'm looking for, our political environment. We are perfectly capable of controlling our political environment and the environment on which everybody has to depend for life. I'm talking about water, air, food. We are capable of doing that. I think what so many people in the United States and around the globe are suffering from right now is this learned helplessness, this idea that, you're condemned. I think religion has done this to us to a certain degree. Warren, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Religion has done this. The political system, capitalism, insists on doing it to people. On the one hand, capitalism makes sure that people will never rise above a certain economic level. And if they do rise above a certain economic level, it is a fluke. It is not what capitalism is designed to do. Capitalism is designed to have two classes, the workers and the bosses, for lack of a better term, the people who control the flow of capital, the people who make the decisions, the life and death decisions, and that's a very small elite number. Pick a number, half of 1%, 1%, whatever. And it applies in South Africa and Tokyo and Beijing, as well as it does in Detroit and Atlanta and New York. It's the same system. I don't care if they call it, whatever they call it, they can call it egg snot if they want to. It is still predatory, destructive capitalism. It has to be ended. It has to be. It has to be. I just wonder how long it's going to take before we realize it in this country. I got to go. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.
If you're shopping.